Welcome to episode 2 of the Patterson Podcast. This is your host, David Mitchell. We're here to share tips and tools from the Patterson process and to hear the stories of people like you using the process to do incredible things. Of all the reasons that people come to us to explore the life plan process, the reason above all is the deep question within every human heart. How do I discover what I'm really made for? Today, we're going to dig into this amazing conversation around our own unique purpose, how we might discover the answers to those questions, and what discovering it might mean for ourselves, our families, and the world at large. It truly is the key to unlocking potential and possibility in the world. Have you been asking those questions? Who am I? Why am I alive? What am I made for? This conversation will really help. In today's episode, we have the privilege of speaking with someone uniquely able to guide us in this conversation. Laura Brazoff has guided over 400 people through the life plan process over the last 8 years. The life plan process is 2 full days, one-on-one with one of our expert facilitators. It is a deep dive into your talents, your story, and your heart. From the clarity of that perspective, a plan is created to help you live a meaningful life of contribution, impact, and joy. Laura is a master facilitator of the process and a trainer with us at the Patterson Center. So the life plan process is really, I think at its core, it's all about story and the beautiful stories of people that we get to guide through the process. So I want to begin by asking you to tell us a story about when you first found yourself asking these same questions: who am I and what am I made for?
Well, I've probably asked that question on and off throughout most of my life. One of the first times I can remember it being very poignant for me was as a freshman in college. I unfortunately had an experience where I was almost date raped. And what that did, thankfully I was able to get away from the situation and from the occurrence. But what it did in me is really start those deeper questions coming to the surface. Things like, why am I even dating? What do I hope to marry one day? Who is that person interested in? And it finally came back, I remember very clearly for me, of, I don't know who I am. So I don't really know if I'm a person that this amazing man would someday think was valuable and worthy and lovable. So I can clearly remember when I was 18, that really started that process for me in the search for who am I at the core of who I am. It ended up changing my major, ended up changing the whole group of friends I was with. I questioned God in that process. Came full circle when I really walked into a group and a community that talked about a relationship with God, not a religion. And so that whole freshman year experience really started me on this trajectory of wanting to live very purposefully, even though looking back, of course, I don't know that I could have put that in words at the time.
That's good. And so I know from talking with you before, you began a really successful career in corporate America. The height of your career, doing a job that I think you loved and doing sales, and you stepped out of that. So tell us a little bit about that story.
That story is definitely a fun one. I ended up getting into sales and to management really at the height of the .com, and it fits very much many of my temperaments now, that I can say from a life planning perspective, like my thinking wavelength, my ability to lead, my ability to cultivate relationships with people, many of my talents. But in the midst of that, also started realizing that I wasn't fulfilled internally. And I can clearly remember thinking, this is a lot of fun. I'm really good at my job. But is this all there is to life? Making tons of money, lots of accolades, but feeling very unfulfilled in terms of my contribution that I was making. It was selling widgets, really, for lack of a better word. Is this all there is? And I can clearly remember coming, wrestling with that question in so many different turns and avenues. In the course of that, I ended up getting cancer and was dealing with a cancer bout that, of course, makes you question the deeper things of life. And I finally came to the conclusion that no matter how much money I would make, my heart wasn't fully alive. And I remember a day in January when my boss, I had just been announced the number one sales rep in this Global 500 company. And he handed me my commission check for the last month, and it was six figures. It was quite a hefty amount. And in the very other hand, I handed him my resignation letter and just said I could not do this job anymore. It wasn't fulfilling. And I remember all my friends and much of my family, the people that I worked with, just could not believe that I'd be willing to walk away from that. But I knew there had to be something more where my talents were more fully employed. My heart was alive. My purpose was activated.
That kind of feels like a scene from a movie, right? Where your boss is handing you this check in the one hand that's reaffirming how good you are at what you do. And yet you're handing a letter back to your boss stepping away. Can you remember in that scene how your boss responded?
He could not believe it. And we had been talking along the ways, you know, prior. What it did end up happening, though, is he asked that I would stay on for 6 months. And I did, but I, according to our agreement, I worked 4 days a month. I ended up moving to Colorado in the meantime. I started a whole new phase of life, but found that they appreciated me, but really couldn't believe that I would walk away from that. I found my replacement for them, which was really fun. But it was a great realization, although I probably didn't have the language back then, of if your heart isn't alive, it's really quite a dead-end job, no matter how much the world is going to tell you this is thrilling.
So in this moment, you're kind of realizing that your heart and your soul are not as alive as you want them to be. And you mentioned before as well that even in this season, you were diagnosed with cancer too. That's a significant turning point in anyone's story. Tell us a little bit about what it was like to receive that news and whether, like, to what extent receiving that news impacted this whole journey.
I think my cancer diagnosis probably crystallized my journey for me in many ways. I often will say I've been an athlete all my life. I've never had, to this day, a cavity. I've never broken a bone. And all of a sudden, in the midst of giving birth to my firstborn, I had never met my primary care physician until after his birth. And it's he that said, you know what, you've got a lump in your neck. This is a little strange. It's probably pregnancy induced. But that started the journey where 4 months later, I can still remember being in a parking lot, eating with all of my family, my extended family, over Mexican dinner, and walking out to take my oncologist call. And he said, it's cancer. And I can still remember the piece of land I was looking at when he gave me that diagnosis. It wrecks your world. And at the time, what I remember processing is, wow, I hope I get to see my son's first birthday. That's what really came to my heart and to my mind. So it started this journey of, you know, people telling you what you should have done differently to not get cancer. I had some other people telling me I don't have cancer. The doctors are all in collusion. And just wrestling through, what does cancer really mean in an age where we don't know how to proceed, how to walk through that well? But it was a great time, I would say, in learning. The way I would put it is God just wasn't an idea at that point. I never needed God to be deep, and I needed him. And it set me on this journey to discover that he's deeper than I could have ever hoped or expected. And that was quite startling as well as very hopeful for me in that process. So it was a long journey. They originally say for thyroid cancer in particular, it's a total thyroidectomy. So they take it out. You have a bout of radiation and pills the rest of your life. And in my case, mine had spread. So it was about 4 surgeries, 3 bouts of radiation, then pills the rest of my life. So it was a long ordeal, about 2.5 years. And in the process of that, I do remember my husband saying, I don't know how and I don't know when, but I know your soul sings in the mountains. And so that's really what got us out of Missouri and to Colorado today. And that gave me a little bit of hope in the midst of a very scary time.
Mm. Well, just, you know, just from me sitting here, it reminds me just of my deep gratitude that I get to have this conversation. When you hear stories like that in turning points, you realize you can't take these moments for granted. So thank you. And as you've spoken about that journey, both with cancer, both the journey to find what makes your heart come alive, We all need guides. We all need help along the way. Where did you begin to go for help and answers to those questions? And as you kind of think about that, how did you end up coming to learn about the life plan process and step into that part of your journey?
It's a great question because I think guides are very important at critical junctures in particular. But guides also have to earn our respect and the ability to impart wisdom in those moments. I have a very dear friend who has been a mentor to me since I was 18 years old. And I remember Diane at the time choosing to walk alongside a very dark journey in the midst of cancer, for instance, and offering wisdom, but yet more importantly, asking questions, good questions to help me start to process in many ways, even a childhood view of God to an adult view, to a understanding about cancer in my head, but how do I live out of that in my heart? She really helped navigate that path. Once we were in Colorado, we realized I had taken a break from working, obviously, after I quit sales. And at one point realized my husband was really not enjoying his job. And at that point, was on a phone call with a friend of ours who's a business consultant and a mentor. And I remember him saying, "Well, what's your passion?" to my husband on the phone. And we're both on different landlines at the time. And I remember being on my landline phone and realizing, oh dear, he can't answer. He doesn't know what his passions are. And that started the process of asking around to some friends. And one of our friends very flippantly, of course, said, "Oh, you need a life plan," to my husband. And of course, like most people, we ended up asking, "What in the world is a life plan? What does that process look like?" But we knew we were ripe. We needed a sense of direction. We needed a process to sort of highlight a path for us in the midst of really a lot of unknowns. And so that led us to my husband to get his life plan, which is hugely instrumental for him. And then a couple of years later, as I was asked to get back into sales with a different company, had an aha moment where I realized I don't want to get back into sales. I want something that will fully engage my heart. And thought about that and realized, I think that's what life planning is all about. And that's what took me down the life plan facilitation track.
Tell us a little bit, what discoveries did you make about yourself in this season? And what things surprised you? What did you learn about yourself that 5 years earlier you couldn't have articulated?
I think for me, a huge one, obviously, to help me understand about sales is what my heart is for. That in any position where our hearts aren't fully activated and alive, it doesn't matter what money we make or if our talents are fully employed, our heart's dead and we're flatlined internally. So that was, I think, very significant realization to understand about myself is my heart really comes alive when I am walking alongside people and guiding. And obviously life planning is definitely along those lines. I think another realization for me was I can tend to be very busy. And I can tend to, now I can say, I don't know that I had the words back then, overperform in areas in my life where I could look really good on the outside to sort of mask some other pain and some other stuff going on internally. And as a result, I could fill my plate extremely full. And because I tend to be highly capable, I can look like I'm balancing very well. But one of the things that came out of my own life plan was I was also sending a message to my kids that they were less important than the priority I wanted to send them. So I came home and got rid of an obligation where I was in leadership and stepped down and made some other life changes along those lines to live more purposefully into who I am.
Yeah, I'm curious. We talk about Patterson, kind of a quote from Tom Patterson, that plans don't self-execute, that just because we have a clear plan for our lives doesn't mean it's going to become our reality. Tell us a little more and give us some advice from your own experience and some insight on some of the things you have done and you did even back then to really help make your vision become your reality.
It's a great question. And I do love Tom's thought that just because we put a plan in place doesn't mean it's going to happen. There really needs to be some intentionality on the aftermath of, for instance, a life plan or a strat op. One of the main things that really helped me is realizing, for instance, we talk about a life net in life planning and setting ourselves up for success by creating basically a system of people who play different roles in our life to help us strategically move forward with our vision. And I realized, for instance, in one of those, I had this amazing mentor, Diane, but she now is in Missouri and I'm in Colorado. And I honestly did not know any older, wiser women in the state of Colorado at that point. It was this huge to be determined in my life plan, but it set me on this journey of finding some amazing women nearby that have definitely impacted my life for the better and called me to be more fully who God has created me to be. And I'm very thankful for that process, but I wouldn't have recognized there was a gap, I don't believe, until faced with that piece in the life plan. So that was one significant way to really execute my own vision. I think another way was being able to really have the filtering tools to what I can say yes to and what I can really need to say no to. And what I've really come to believe is I rob people of their own abilities to show up well when I so flippantly can say yes to everything and seemingly manage it well. But I've robbed them of their own rightful place in God's amazing process. And so recognizing that a no is helpful rather than a negative, I think was a huge light bulb moment for me as well. So being able to step down from certain things, having a filtering tool to say yes to others, no to some, has really helped guide me since then.
So we're talking here, we're in the room that you use to guide women through the life plan process. This is a space where hundreds have been guided through this. You've seen and heard and guided others through their own stories, beautiful stories, inspirational stories, some tragedies, some stories that are so funny they make us cry with laughter, and that whole blend. So from your experience guiding over 400 people through this process, if you could describe to myself and to those listening what you've learned about the human story, what would you say?
The human story is incredible. I truly see it as a gift that we as facilitators get to handle with care and allow the shaping of, I would say, positivity and usefulness out of our own stories. I've seen a couple of things. I laughingly often will say, I get a front row seat on what God is doing in the hearts and lives of men and women around me. I think sometimes when we're in a space where we get to come alongside others and hear truth, and to be able to affirm truth in that manner, what we see still, even in the midst of brokenness, we can still see the work that's being done, the strength that's being fashioned and formed, the grace that can come out of hard spots, is an amazing journey, quite honestly, as a facilitator, to speak that out, to use words to highlight truth in the midst of stories where we're not creating purpose or vision, but we're actually just putting words around truth of that purpose and vision that was evident even in the midst of harder stories. So yes, lots of laughter, lots of tears, but through it all, I remain thankful to come alongside.
I love that. Thank you. We're going to have opportunities in future conversations to dive into some more of those things that you've unearthed. I'm looking forward to that. But I want to shift pace now just to tap into some of the things that help you just navigate your own life. And so we're diving into kind of a quick fire round. I've just got a series of quick questions. Just give me your first response. That sound good?
Wonderful.
So what's a favorite book and why?
Currently right now, Way of the Shepherd. Love this book. It talks about leadership principles from just the opportunity to speak about shepherding. What does good shepherding look like? And parallel to that, I found a little used old copy of a book called The Shepherd's Look at Psalm 23. And just recognizing why, for instance, we talk about God as the good shepherd has just changed my whole concept of leadership, quite honestly. So it's been challenging in a very, very good way.
What's a daily practice you do that you would encourage others to follow?
To laugh. I think laughter is significant and huge. We have a lot of hard times, but to try to find laughter and fun in the midst of it, whether that means dancing in the kitchen or pulling at the side of the road to jump in snow, I think that's important to have joy and to experience joy head on.
That's good. I'm going to try dancing in the kitchen tonight, maybe. In Life Plan, we talk about the replenishment cycle. How do you stay replenished?
I have many different ways. One of the main ways, though, is really getting and retreating to the mountains. I realized that I thrive in nature. I quite honestly, I become alive in nature. For me, particularly growing up in California, the ocean is beautiful, but the mountains is where, the way I would say it, is where my soul sings. So get me past those foothills 10 times a year, whether or not it's a day, a weekend, a week. I'm at my best. I come back refreshed. I am a better mom, a better wife, a better facilitator, because I've chosen to take care of myself. And that is life-giving to me.
Well, Laura, thank you so much for joining us today, leading us through this conversation around discovering our unique purpose in life. It's been a real pleasure to speak with you today.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the Patterson Podcast. This episode was produced and edited by Mary Wade, music produced by Ox Creative. If you're listening and wanting to know more, you can reach out to us at pattersoncenter.com. That's Patterson with one T. It would be our pleasure to hear from you and to guide you deeper into this conversation. You can subscribe to our show on iTunes, and when you're there, please leave us a review. We hope you've enjoyed the show, and we look forward to seeing you next time.